Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Let's just kick it up. Let's just do it. If we fuck up the intro, we can just do it.
That's funny. It's just funny.
For fun. If you're having fun, they're having fun. You know, just don't even think about it.
Yeah.
For coaching us through.
Thanks. Cheers.
Yeah. It's nice.
By the way, I say that to anyone I meet. I say that to, even if it's not about a podcast or comedy. I think it's like the most inane, funniest thing you can say. But just honestly, just throw this one away. We've got a great one.
You've got to let Joel start. You simply must.
With Tim's inspiration, I feel like I can finally actually do the introduction.
Yeah, it's exciting.
It's nice. Yeah.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to a very special edition, a crossover episode between the worst idea of all time and Plumbing the Death Star. I'm Joel.
I'm also Joel.
I'm Jackson.
I'm Guy.
And I'm Tim.
And today...
And together... Oh, you go.
And today we are asking the important questions, like, how does the economy work in Grown Ups 2? So, Guy and Tim, you are obviously Grown Ups 2 experts.
Yeah.
Plumbing the Death Star. Team Plumbing the Death Star have seen the movie
collectively
once together.
Yeah.
And I think I've seen it once by myself.
I need to confess, it was something of a phone watch. movie did not captivate me much.
That's okay, because it doesn't matter if we didn't really watch it, because... You two obviously have watched it enough times for all of us.
Before we go on, though, let's get some quick math. We've got a phone watch. What's the collective total, do you think, of viewing Grown Ups 2 for your side of the podcast equation?
I would say that when we watched it together,
yeah.
I was paying enough attention to say that it wasn't a phone watch. My phone may not have even been with me. So that's one. And at one point, I looked over at my good friend Jackson, who was on his phone. And I was like, did you see that? That was so funny. Which felt bad to doing Grown Ups 2. And he wasn't paying attention.
I didn't see what I've always so funny. Although I think I might have tried to lie and say I did, so you didn't ask any follow-up questions.
I was like, you missed it. That was probably the best joke of the movie. Yeah. And then I did the joke for you.
Yeah, that's kind of you.
I know you're reminiscing about the broader experience, but I just have to know what the joke was.
Yeah. I'm so curious.
So at that point in the movie, it was, because I've only seen it once, characters' names, not going to be great with them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Physical description will do, and we will be able to deliver.
It was David
Bjorn Ironside. From Vikings, that character.
Yeah, David Spade's son.
Brayden.
Thank you.
So Brayden, it's just a weird cutaway where he is sitting in like a floating inflatable tube thing. And I think he just says, I love summer.
No, he says one word as the camera slowly zooms into him and he dead eyes the camera. Summertime.
And he says it because he sees those two other boys, Adam Sandler and Chris Rock's sons, pissing beer out of their cocks.
And he just goes, summertime.
And it's good. It's threatening. It's menacing. Yeah, but it's incredible. A promise of whimsy.
Which
is what I like about it.
It just doesn't match the rest of the movie whatsoever.
No.
It's like a gif. They just put a gif in the middle of the movie and they're like, this will work.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of the movie is kind of a different movie than the movie that we're watching. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it just feels there's not much, like, it's all disjointed. It just feels like when there's a gag that's run its course, it just ends.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Like,
there's no real closure to
it. They do a sitcom thing where they often, and I kind of forgotten this because it has been a little while between drinks, but they do, like, a little musical interlude to make a joke work. They'll deliver a punchline, and then it'll be like, dun, 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 dun. It's like, wait a minute. This is a movie, guys.
Yeah, but it's a welcome reminder that a movie is whatever you make it.
Yeah, that's true.
And
that's true.
If it goes for an hour and a half, you can do whatever you want and call it a movie, and you're fine. Yeah,
that's why we got movie length. That's why we have that as an option.
Well, I just want to answer your collective question. Probably between us, between 104 and 112 times.
Yeah, between us, four?
Yeah.
Four,
I reckon.
Yeah. This is 104 to 114. Yep. So there's quite a bit of a difference.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that watching this with people that hadn't seen it, even though I had seen it once and vaguely remembered it, knowing that the movie opens with a deer piss joke, it's good.
It's a joke? It's just a thing that happened.
Presumably
it's meant to be funny.
The family take it in their stride.
Yeah.
And we'll get to actually answering the question in a moment. We've just got to get some feelings about grown-ups too.
Of course.
Yeah, because Adam Sandler's character gets pissed on by a deer, and he's scared about the deer being in his room at first, but then when the deer's out of the house, they're just like, oh, that's just like a...
Yeah, it's nice that him and his son shared deer piss.
Yeah.
Like the same deer piss.
Yeah.
Do you know what's weird, though? And this is like an observation you would only get after, you know, a collective triple digits effort from the side of the pond. So this deer, right? That I had never realized this before, but the deer is the whole reason at the very end of the movie when the party gets disrupted. So there's a big fight, but then the college kids all get scared by the deer. So this deer at the start of the movie elicits very little fear out of Adam Sandler's family, but then elicits so much fear out of an entire college campus of kids.
Yeah, because it eats a man's penis.
Yeah, it eats a man's penis right off.
I mean, if I saw a deer eat a man's penis, I might be scared of deer from then on. Yeah. Really? It's terrifying. You don't expect it from a deer. A bear,
Deer. Yeah, I think in a way I'm already a little bit scared that like not a deer will eat my penis, but like that like maybe someone like a horse or a cow will.
You overestimate how appealing your penis is to these vegetarian animals.
Well, I think it's because
that's a worst case scenario. That's a that's their last option.
I think it's because they said when you feed a deer or you feed a cow or a horse a carrot, they're like you need to have a flat palm. Because otherwise they'll think your fingers are carrots. Yeah. And I guess in my head, I'm like, if a horse has such a poor understanding of what a carrot is, if I'm in a situation where I'm...
You know, traipsing around the farmyard, dude, is the day you were born.
Yeah, then there's a chance that a horse will bite my penis off. That's scary.
You put yourself in a situation where a horse is at risk of mistaking your cock for a carrot, and that's entirely on you. Like, the horse is just operating on instinct.
Jackson, normally I wouldn't team up with Guy to bully someone, but take some fucking personal responsibility, would you? If you are so frequently in an environment with horses, butt naked, your member blowing in the wind, I think that's you need to take a look at yourself.
Yeah,
rather than be scared.
Take some self-respect, man. Put on some pants.
This would be rude to say if I was bleeding from my crotch. If I was lying it's there true. And you're like, well,
yeah, we you know what?
Shouldn't have been nude at the farm, dude.
We put on clothes to pat this horse, and here
even
you
Even then,
are.
With the information you've given us, I think it would be totally fair enough. I would take no pity. I'd say, what did you expect? We literally warned you about this exact thing.
I'm sorry. Look, I am sorry you have no dick anymore.
Please.
And that horse ate your penis. And that you're currently bleeding quite a substantial amount.
Yeah.
But you've got to understand that once you're healed up and aren't going to die from getting your dick eat by a horse, we aren't going to be like kind about this. We will be stern and be like, well, yeah, you got what you deserved.
Please call an ambulance.
In a minute. Stop to berate you more.
Stop admonishing
I'm not done
me.
With
you know
life,
what? Maybe we'd take sympathy and pity and we'd really hold your hand. We'd wait for the paramedics and we'd usher you to the hospital. And then you'd be put under anesthetic for whatever surgery is required to mend the mess that you have created by your own hand. And what we'd say is to the surgeon, we'd give them a sort of a flaccid, slightly old carrot, and we'd say, sew that on.
It feels weird that you guys have taken such a pop shot at grown-ups for having a deer piss joke at the start, and we've been doing an extended riff about Jackson's penis getting eaten off, like, it feels like an hour now. So to move this on, I'm going to open a beer onto the mic.
What do you expect? Like, what are you left with to talk about?
Yeah. But, come on.
I mean, so but broadly speaking, what were your experiences of the film today? Were they positive? Were they negative?
I think they were sort of neutral.
Mostly
I would say.
Negative, yeah, I feel, from my end.
Yeah,
it falls into the category of movie for me where it's a positive experience because I like to be reminded that movies like this exist.
Yeah.
And because there's a lot of very baffling decisions in it that yeah, pretty memorable. In fact, it's a similar experience I had to when I saw the Adam Sandler vehicle Blended in cinemas.
Yeah.
And there's a Dale Steyn cameo just in the middle of the film. And I was like, who is this for? This is an American film set in Africa, which has now just been revealed to be South Africa, featuring a South African cricket player. And there's a joke about how cricket isn't the same as baseball.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is in a movie and it made it all the way to cinema. And I just...
It's for Adam.
Yeah.
Like a lot of stuff that's in the productions is for Adam Sandler.
But then even Adam Sandler doesn't seem to care about cricket. Why is Dale Steyn in the movie?
Yeah, I don't know. To me, it was just this like, it does give you hope that you can really produce anything and someone will watch it and find it entertaining, which is really nice to know.
Grown-ups 2 made like $300 million
or something. Yeah, which is an insane amount of money. It just, I don't know, it feels like, you know, they say comedy is a sort of medium that ages real quickly, and I feel that this one was aging as they were doing it.
But, I think part of that's why I like it.
Yeah.
I like that I can watch a bad movie and be like, that was just sort of unashamedly a bad movie. It doesn't impact my life any. Just a you know.
It's crazy that these were some of the comedy greats of the 90s.
Yeah.
You know, like on the 2000s. That these were like, no, these are the funniest motherfuckers that we can chuck on screen. Don't worry. Everything they do is going to be good. And I think they themselves are like, man, we got, you know, we've been out of the game for a while. We got to bring our A game for these films. Man, there's some funny people out there. And this is going to be good.
Yeah.
It's going to be good.
Chris Rock being in this movie still to this day shakes me to my core. Like, he is an important comedian. And it's just like, what is he doing?
This would have come out either during the production or just before he made Top 5.
Yeah.
Which was Chris Rock's return, like him in a star vehicle in a film. And also, like, there was like a critically well-received film.
They've all made good, save for maybe Kevin James. Like, their career has all maintained comedic value.
No, Kevin James actually has redeemed himself because he did all of those hilarious online videos where he would like insert himself into, and they were brilliant.
They're
like,
really
so good.
The sound guy.
He would put himself at, that's right, he was the sound guy on like famous sets. Did you not see these?
No.
I thought I sent them to you. They're fucking well done.
It's
just
very
like
funny.
They'll be shooting I Am Legend or something, and then, you know, the frames just sort of turns a little bit and Kevin James has like dropped the boom onto Will Smith. It's good shit.
Ryan Gosling, and Ryan Gosling is doing the whole speech from which film was it in?
From Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, most of his films, I guess. A romantic one, if this helps.
Crazy Stupid Love?
Nah. The one where he climbs a Ferris wheel, I think.
Okay.
Alzheimer's.
The Notebook.
Yeah, the Notebook. I'd just like to circle back to Jackson's point about taking comfort and knowing it's bad, and that's fine, and you meet it on its terms, and it makes it inoffensive. And like to think of all of these guys as comedy titans or whatever at different phases in their career, and it is like there's a weird calm that washes over you and seeing that none of them are trying.
Unspoken,
at least to us as an audience, agreement that none of them are going to put an effort in. And watching Chris Rock act in this movie today, I was like, I can act that good. And I'm like, I can't act. But he's walking around being like, no, today's your diaper day.
Yeah. You know? To know that we could have been in Grown Ups too. That's the comfort.
If
the five of us did that math right. Did Grown Up too. It would be just as good.
I think the real hard part would be the five of us cumulatively having worthy comedy careers that would get us to a point where we just have the right to make Grown Up too.
I say to the other four of you, catch up.
Yeah, we're doing our best.
Get on my
trailblazer, Tim.
I don't know. It's very nice. Like as a business owner, it's really nice that you can openly sort of commit, I guess, tax fraud. And everyone is just okay with it. It's like, I'm doing this for a lovely holiday and a catch up with my friends. And everyone is like,
great,
we're on board.
Enjoy.
Here's some money.
Other highlights of the film is clearly where there's just no script for certain scenes. Which is fine for like the, you know, the comedy titans of the 90s. There's also a lot of children in this film.
Yeah.
So often you'll have actors improvising and the children who aren't meant to be responding in the way they're responding, just pissing themselves laughing in the background.
Yeah.
Well, what's his name? Nick Swartzen.
Swartzen.
Yes. Roberts wasn't is
bus driver man.
You know, improvising about how he's cooked as a bus driver, and then you've got Adam Sandler's kids in the background just laughing nonstop.
I have to say, just because like it would pay me to leave this out, but I watched this on Netflix today, and we did our whole season, I think, using a pirated copy. We downloaded
online. Illegally pirated copy.
And they've cut jokes out of the Netflix one that I'm really so used to seeing, and it really messed me up. Like there's a Nick Swardson line about how when they first meet up with him and Adam Sandler asks how he's doing, and he says that he got floated a couple pills at a Cypress Hill concert.
Yeah.
And like understandably, in this children's comedy movie, that joke has been cut.
Well, we watched it because we're currently in the UK. We watched it on Sky, and that joke was still in it.
Yeah, thank God.
Cool.
Well, the joke that I really missed, because I actually did miss that, and the way the comedic beat worked, instead the joke ended on being like, she caught me eating a banana with my butt, and then the punchline, the tag is like, I shouldn't have done it at her mum's house.
Yeah.
And it gets out, and I'm like, I don't like the joke, but comedically that makes sense. Yeah. You haven't just let him do one improv and left it all in. But the joke I really missed is it's a scene, the surrounding scene I don't miss so much. It's in a gymnasium, and it's Chris Rock's daughter and Bumpty, and they're sort of like flirting on the rafters or something. And then the gym teacher, who's a sports broadcaster in America called Dan Patrick, is like sort of, he throws a ball at Bumpty and knocks him out, and then he goes, who wants to watch me climb a rope? And it's like always stood out, you know, it's just such a phenomenal delivery, and it's like it's actually a funny line as
and
well.
And why would they cut that?
And they cut
offensive.
That too.
What? That's so baffling.
Do they cut it because the follow-up joke, which is significantly less funny, is Bumpty lying on the ground looking up the gym teacher's shorts and makes a comment about his balls?
That was gone too, I think.
Of course. You could.
Yeah, that was gone too.
You couldn't cut that line and then just have a scene of Bumpty looking at a gym teacher's foot. That's more sinister.
I guess that's why they cut it.
Yeah.
Because the punchline to us was his fantastic delivery on who wants to watch me climb a rope, but to them, it's the kid seeing the balls of the gym teacher.
Yeah. So I wonder if for some reason...
Fun. We can't have kids watching balls, so we'll cut this and we'll cut that. Or it could just been pacing. They were like, it's a bit too long.
Yeah.
We'll cut this out.
That, 1 hour 40 minute runtime. We can get it down to 135, baby.
I did. It was actually, when I checked at the start, it was running 136 on Netflix. So your instincts are phenomenal, Joel. Money.
Nicely.
Things
done.
That still work in this movie. John Lovitz.
Yes.
David Spade, I'm never upset to see him on screen. He's got an easygoing charisma. I think because it feels like he's never trying when he's not trying, it works for him.
Yeah. He's got another joke that took me by surprise in the movie that made me laugh out loud, even though it's a very 90s joke. The movie puts like, in quotes, unappealing women in situations with David Spade, and then it's referenced that he slept with them.
Yeah.
And then it happens again when the pizza delivery lady delivers a pizza, and his son's Braden, is that his name? Son's name?
Mm-hmm. You got
nice.
It.
Well, well done.
Is
well
there, done. And like he grabs a pizza that's like the weird, incredibly intensely sexual flirting.
Yeah.
And then Braden's looking at his dad, and David Spade shuts the door, and he's just like, they're not all tense.
Yeah, it's good.
He's genuinely funny in the movie.
Yeah.
Great delivery on that line.
The moments between Higgins, David Spade, and his son, Braden, are like, you know, when he arrives and he's on the phone, hiccups McGee, and all that shit you can take or leave. But then when he shows up and he's got the drawing of the man, and he's like, you're him. And he's like, without the hat. That's like, you know.
It's good. It's very good.
I feel like if you squint, there is potentially like maybe four different potentially good films in this film. So you've got like a deadbeat dad kind of connecting with their very aggressive son that they've just found out about. You've got like someone being like, oh, where I'm aging out, I'm approaching this kind of thing where I can't do the things that I used to do, and like I don't want a fourth kid, but my wife, you know, oh god, she's pregnant,
what am I gonna do,
dealing with that. You've also got like a nice coming of age film between like all the kids there. You've got something where Kevin James loves his mum too much.
Yeah.
I don't really know what that was about. But there's definitely like some nice films that you call like nice stories.
But surely it's all coincidental. Like, surely it's all. It's just like David Spade was like, it'd be funny if I had a huge son. Like, that would be funny. Write it in.
A huge son with the shit like facial mustache I've got. Yeah,
and it is funny to have a huge son. That's not untrue.
I like the idea of it, because when you write a movie, or like, not that I've written and made a movie, but when you create anything and you write it down and then there's a separate team of people in production who work on it,
yeah,
you show up and they're like, we can't find the right colored giant tire. And you're like, oh man, like it didn't have to be green. I just wrote that, yeah. You know. And this movie reeks of moments where Adam Sandler showed up to set and they've got all of the elaborate things that they've called for. Like,
I can
around
see
him.
Him in his like production office just throwing a rubber ball at the wall and someone's writing down what he's saying. Yeah, yeah. It's like, and then the tire runs through the entire town and then we jump off a waterfall. And then
there's a raft. The raft gag's so good we're going to use it twice.
It's the second movie I've seen recently that has a joke about a man's head going into another man's asshole.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hancock being the other one, the 2008 Will Smith superhero vehicle.
Well, except, see, because we'd watched that recently for a couple of episodes, and in that, like, people do go in assholes, like,
yeah,
it happens.
Yeah.
And so when, because I'd never seen Grown Ups 2, obviously, you were like, you warned me.
You were like,
there's
going to
be some,
too.
David Spade goes in Kevin James's asshole. And then I was almost disappointed when, because yeah. I think my personal fan theory is that he didn't really,
you know. I mean, it would be, like, the logistics of it, of Kevin James falling ass first naked onto David Spade.
Yeah.
And clearly, you're like, oh, he fell on his head. That's what, well, I'm assuming a digit must have been, because he was shielding his face, right? Yeah. But, like, the angle and the velocity and all that, just kind of angling it right for David Spade.
I don't think it happened. I think David Spade was just making a joke.
Should we give a little context to those who haven't seen Grown Ups 2?
Yeah, sure.
Adam Sandler, Chris Rock, Kevin James, and David Spade are forced by some college kids to jump off a famous peak, the quarry that overlooks the river called Suicide 35, which is 35 feet above the water, and they force them to do it naked.
Yeah.
So we get this hilarious montage of our four comedy superstars jumping naked off of this thing, and we just see their asses. And Kevin James is kind of a big guy, and it's pretty funny because David Spade's got in the water just before him, and Kevin James is a pretty heavy guy, and he lands right on top of his head.
Yeah, he sustains, in this Looney Tunes universe, he sustains no lasting injuries, even though, like,
you kill a man. All of the college kids are silent at the edge of the lake as their lives are changed forever. A realistic version of that. That's a trauma bond they take for the rest of their lives.
Oh yeah.
It started off like the good bit of Stand By Me, but then it ended like the bad bit of Stand By Me.
Exactly.
Yeah, I guess if you take a lot of the Looney Tunes, like I guess physics of this movie, there's a lot of dead people.
Oh yeah.
Well, David Spade's dead. The bus driver's dead multiple times.
What would happen if you got rolled in a tire? Like David Spade in real life.
Well, it would go to mush, right?
Yeah. No. Okay, so this happened while we were watching it. There was two scenes. One was a tire scene, and I can't remember what the other one was.
Yeah. I think when they were hanging the bus driver.
I know exactly what it'll be.
Down.
It'll be when Nick Swardson, you're right, he's the bus driver. It's specifically when he drops him, and then he's on the floor, and then he accelerates, and his head just smacks into the back of the bus.
Yeah. I don't know. He's very purple. Like, his hands and, like, arms and face are very purple.
Yeah.
The blood is rushing to, like, there. So the moment his face impacts the back of the bus, like, it's popping like a pimple, right?
Well, the reason I bring up the tire, and it wasn't that moment. There was another moment in the film where my good friend Joel Zammit was like, if they did that in real life, they'd be dead.
Yeah.
And two out of the three examples, not the bus example, but the tire one definitely, I was like, oh no, I've seen what would happen because they do this exact stunt in Jackass.
The new one?
The tire one is in the series, I think.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah, like, there's a couple of instances where you were like, oh no, that wouldn't work. And I was like, no, I've seen what it does to the human body. They spew heaps.
Yeah, I just feel like going that fast, like, kind of, you know, would do something to your brain.
Yeah, I feel like,
it would also sever something.
It would kill Shaquille O'Neal as well when he stops it with his wiener.
Big time.
Shaquille O'Neal is having so much fun in this movie.
Everyone seems to be having a lot of fun in this film.
It's lovely. It's lovely to see.
The nicest thing about
Shaquille O'Neal comes across as one of the stronger actors.
Yeah.
You know, like, I feel like he's excited by the opportunity, so he actually tries.
Guy and I have watched like all of the behind the scenes footage and promo interviews, even stuff that like didn't go to air anywhere. There's special places on the internet that we've found where it's like promo interviews that never got like aired anywhere.
Yeah.
And everyone raves about what a fucking good dude Shaq is. And that he's just like hilarious, kind, great actor.
A big part of Sandler's like, he has basketball hoops on all of his sets.
Yeah.
And like a huge part of, you know, it'll be fun for Shaquille O'Neal to be in an Adam Sandler movie. More than that, it'll be fun for Adam Sandler to play basketball with Shaquille O'Neal. Like all he wants to do is play basketball.
It threatened this movie. There was a guy who was part of the production of Grown Ups 2 who got in touch with us during season one and told us that they were running like hideously behind schedule because Adam Sandler and the guys just kept playing basketball when they should have been like, shoot, they were fucking off all the time.
That's awesome.
By all accounts, Adam Sandler sounds like the nicest man in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's a great guy. I wish we were part of his circle just to like be involved in any of these films and have a lovely time with all these people.
Do you think that we could just label our podcast as a Happy Madison production and just hope?
Yeah.
Terrific.
Surely he doesn't know everything within his empire. Yeah. Surely we can fly in under the radar.
I've got a podcast? Yeah, okay, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, I could have done that at some point. All right. Yeah. Put them in Grown Ups 3, sure.
Film? All right, yeah, makes sense.
All right, why not?
Have I met him?
I feel we've reached the point in the podcast where we probably should start hammering down into the economy of the Grown Ups 2.
So talk us through the question. Like, why did you decide that this would be the question for today?
So I think I've got some theories watching this film, but
I'm curious as to why you think the economy is so interesting.
Well, yeah. I'll let Tim and Guy answer this because this was their idea for the question.
Yeah.
But watching it, I was like, straight away, I was like, oh, yeah, they're absolutely on here. Because no one goes to work at any point.
Yeah. That's not true. We see Chris Rock specifically go to work to not work.
That's what I'm fascinated by, because when this sort of proposal got floated that we would do a mashup episode and we were looking for what question to kind of interrogate the movie with, I was like, at this point, approaching the 60th watch, the interesting bit for me is specifically how the economy of this town works.
Yeah.
Because it's not like jobs don't exist. That would be way cleaner. That would be like, we could assume there was some sort of universal basic income program or they're all rich living off some sort of stipend, whatever. But it's not like that. It's more complicated because jobs exist and some of them have jobs.
Yeah.
But Kevin James works in an auto body shop, which he visits for seemingly 20 minutes in the day.
I believe does he own it? Yeah. Or is he a co-owner of it?
Yeah, it's his. I think it's his shop.
Yeah, okay.
David Spade works part-time at a go-kart track.
Yeah.
We know Adam Sandler's job in this is never referenced, and we only know because we've seen Grown Ups 1.
Do you know what? It is mentioned, and without wanting to get ahead of answering the question, Colin Quinn, when there's like a sort of a moment of harmony amongst the townies, as they're called by the frat boys, says, Lenny Fader left this town. Went to Hollywood, made big bucks, probably more than all you boneheads were making your whole lives all put together, and then he came back.
Mm-hmm. That's true. This town's his home.
And there's something to me, because watching it, I was like, the interesting thing is they all have jobs, but again, it's sort of Looney Tune universe, like a child interpretation of what a job is. Selma Hayek owns a boutique fashion store where she goes. Her employee is incredibly unprofessional and harangues her about having dated her husband. And she's like, okay, well, you're in charge of the business.
She kicks her employee in the head. Actually, you can't do that. It's actually not allowed.
I feel like at one point, like she had easy grounds to fire that woman.
Yeah.
But then now the employee clearly has grounds to sue the shit out of her employer.
Especially in America.
She's inviting trouble.
Well, I guess there is, because we could probably go through the jobs that are in this film, because one of Adam Sandler's kids works at an ice cream store for about 15 minutes. We've got, Selma Hayek runs the boutique clothing store. We've got the yoga instructor.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a job.
Yoga instructor, cleaning at the yoga instructor.
Janitor, that's right.
Although he seems to be cleaning multiple places. He seems to be janitor.
He's
the town's janitor.
He's the only game in town.
Yeah.
Because he's also
the clown, the town is very very clean.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he's doing a good job. He's also the janitor at the school, remember?
He's got them by the short and curly, though, because God, me, oh my, human resources wants to fire him, but boy, does he keep things spick and
span. If only he didn't do such a good job.
You've got Kmart.
Yeah.
Kmart is a
Steve Buscemi is a driving instructor.
Yep. Yep.
You've got a coffee shop that the bus driver crashes into and I assume orders a coffee.
Yeah.
Bus driver.
Obviously, Shaquille O'Neal. You got the police.
You got the cops.
We've got cops. So we've got like a municipal sort of civil service structure going on. People are paying taxes.
Yeah, it's
happening. But how the fuck are they generating income?
There's a school, so there's like a teacher.
Yeah, that's true. That's
the principal
true.
There, that's a whole then, system. You also got a university that's quite close, I can only assume.
Yeah, true.
But
is this a university town?
But then on top of that, all of these jobs we see, apart from the cleaner who is clearly everywhere and doing an incredible job all the time, no one is actually doing their job.
Yeah.
Like, I guess Tim Meadows at Kmart seems to be working, but then he also gets choked out on shift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
An impediment to doing your job.
If anyone is working in this movie, they get stopped immediately. There's like some sort of force where if someone is being, which is, okay, so here's what I'm thinking, right?
Yeah.
There is like some sort of heavily socialist underpinning, which sort of girdles the town. So if anyone is starting to be productive in this economy, they must be cut off at the knees. It's like, if you start this Cold War arms race of earning actual money and forming a productive industry here, suddenly we're all going to be doing 9 to 5, 5 days a week. And frankly, that is not compatible with our lives.
That really changes the scene where Chris Rock doesn't go to work because it's no longer like he's lazy. He's like, I can't.
Yeah.
God. He's fighting for his life.
He is a cable guy. He's a cable guy who we know just has one job for the entire day. And that's not even a case where, like, with the other stuff, like Kevin James, we're sort of extrapolating that he's there for 20 minutes in the day at the shop. That
and with Kevin James, he owns the place too. So you can assume maybe it's employees that are actually doing the lion's share of the work.
Well, yeah, because the very muscular, sexy lady, she works for the...
Exactly. So he's got people working for him.
Yeah, but Chris Rock, we know his entire day, like his schedule that day, he's been booked to do one install job.
What if it's
not viable, guys? If I was Comcast, I'd get the fuck out of that town. Something weird's going on.
Heaps. See, I think.
Yeah.
So... because again, when we're talking about, there's a scene just before the hilarious titans of comedy are jumping off a cliff naked. So there's that scene where the frat boys are mocking these people. We do go through their jobs.
Yeah.
And one of them is like, you know, points to Kevin James. I think it's Chris Rock. Points to Kevin James. Like, he owns like one of the best auto repair shops. This guy, he works part-time at a go-kart, blah, blah. But they all very deliberately not mention what Adam Sandler does.
Oh, okay.
It's a really weird scene because they just kind of focus on Adam Sandler's face and nothing happens.
Yeah.
And they don't really say anything. And then, of course, they jump off naked, hilarious.
Yeah, I wonder if they did that because that may have been a pickup or something. It doesn't work if they say...
It's so funny because it's a movie that made $300 million US and you're like, maybe someone forgot to say it in that take.
No, I think that what happened is not that they forgot to say it, but just that they had the ending scene where they're like, he left this town and he came back to this town after making big Hollywood bucks.
That's not supposed to be, Joel, that's not supposed to be a reveal.
Yeah, what are you talking about? What?
That only works if no one has seen Grown Ups 1.
It's not a twist.
No. It's because they're saying it to Taylor Lautner, who is also the same person who this speech is to before.
I think it
would
actually make more sense if it was addressed here and then later it would become a callback.
Like, he's like a big Hollywood big shot in the end. Like, yeah, he came back because of...
Exactly.
Anywho, so they don't mention his name or they don't mention what his job is, whatever. Then they make him do the jump. So my theory is that because we don't really know how much Adam Sandler made when he was a big Hollywood superstar agent, whatever.
Yeah.
But I think he made a lot of money. I'm thinking he made like billions. Like, I think he's maybe like perhaps in the 1%, as it were. And so I think he kind of came back to this town because we haven't not seen Grown Ups 1.
No,
but do we ever see the town before he came back? I'm going to assume it was a garbage town that no one cared about and was kind of like falling apart. The economy was just in the toilet. So when he came in with all his billions and was like, I miss this town and what it used to be. Because you have this ice cream shop that isn't really like a modern day ice cream shop.
That's
it
true.
It looks like an ice cream shop.
It's vintage.
Kind of like out of like in the 1950s or something
So you're suggesting basically Adam Sandler is bankrolling the town.
Yes, I think that everyone here understands the situation, which is to make Adam Sandler or whatever his name is, Larry Ender, I don't know.
Yeah.
sure. Lenny Fader.
Sure.
Well, I guess I would kind of explain, if everybody's kind of like, Adam Sandler is where my paycheck comes from, then when David Spade is tortured by being rolled down in a tire, he's like, well, this is what I signed up for,
I guess.
It's
also why Adam Sandler thinks that he has, I guess, the, you know, the audacity to be like, I'm going to drive this bus and no one can do anything.
Nobody can stop me.
Even the cops
don't. It's also a functional metaphor for the movie itself and the way that the economy of the actual Happy Madison Productions runs.
I totally
agree. The other question mark, or the other, like, I feel like anyone who's not a main character within the world of the film but still lives in the same town is employed by Kmart. And I feel like all of those people are earning an honest living. Like, it's sort of, Kmart appears to be, there are these specific stores. You've got your fashion store, you've got a supermarket. What else? You've got your auto body shop. But like, by and large, and this is, I've been to some small towns, like a big store like Kmart moving in is basically death to mom and pop stores.
Yeah,
and this
absolutely.
Is a place that would have previously been populated by all these little community stores, and everyone's, you know, they've all got their family businesses, how they operate. I think between Kmart and Adam Sandler, everyone is taken care of and not everyone's happy.
Well, I guess this is the question then. Did Adam Sandler commission the Kmart?
I think the Kmart is a threat to Adam Sandler. Yeah. I think he worries about it. I think we don't see it in the movie, but at night, that's what he stresses about, because he's like, it's me versus the Kmart. In fact, if Grown Ups 3 was about that, that would rule.
We've got a duopolistic economy that is just, the two poles of it are Adam Sandler's character, Lenny Fader, which funds 50% of the economy, and Kmart funding the other
and
half.
And I can understand the tension as well, because the people who work at Kmart would resent everyone beneath Lenny's umbrella, because, like, you don't know anything about an honest day's work. Like, you don't do anything for your money. You just live off of your friend like a sponge.
You're in this imagined weird 1950s pseudo dream of
but
an ice
all
cream
of the
store.
People underneath Adam Sandler's umbrella would be like, well, that Kmart moved into town. It put my mom and my dad out of business. It shut down all of the locally owned and operated original stores.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So you guys are in fact, and there's grounds for, you know, you can see the value this in either
feels,
argument.
To me, this feels like what's happening with the metaverse, that we're all like in pretty quick order going to be living in this world, which is like Mark Zuckerberg's fucked up version of Earth. And this is like Adam Sandler's going like, this is what the hometown was like. There was an ice cream shop and there was a go-kart track.
And it's just funded
all of these projects that people have to then exist in full time. And that's what we're headed towards.
It's like, I gotta go. That would be so weird to be like, I know I need to go to my place of work for a bit to satisfy Adam Sandler to be like, they are good. You are working.
And
you don't have to be there long.
You kind of see this a lot in a lot. Again, you go back to that scene where they're talking to the frat guys.
Yeah.
And there's almost, like, you could kind of, if you scored that a little bit differently, to kind of have the fear in, say, Adam Sandler's friends to be like, guys, shut the fuck up. You're going to ruin a good thing. You don't know what's going on here.
Yeah.
So please be quiet.
They're seconds away from leaning in and being like, Adam Sandler runs this town.
if you mention something, we're going to ruin it, and then we're going to have to, like, deal with our lives.
Yeah.
And it kind of, like, if you look at every single one of them and how they occupy their time, a lot of it is to go around and help Adam Sandler.
Yeah, yeah.
So you got like a horny David Spade being like, I'm fucking around and just doing everything, I guess I go to this.
There's a Truman Show quality to it.
Yeah.
Like when they go to the ballet recital and it's full of all these people and you're like, who found all these people?
Well, yeah.
Why are all of these people in the auditorium to watch this ballet recital? And there's someone, it's probably someone close to him. It might be Lamonsoff between visits to like his mom's and the auto body shop. He's like in charge of the accounts and he's like hiring all of these people. He's bringing them on buses and he's putting them in a hall and he's like, Sandler's going to get here in 5 minutes. I've held him up with this big police fucking firing bus entrance from Kmart, but we need everyone sitting in here pronto. He's got to see that the town's popping off.
100%. They're like,
horrifying.
We need someone like we need a big titted instructor there to keep Adam Sandler happy. Well, can't have it. It just seems everything there is for his benefit.
Yeah.
Even his bully.
Let's extrapolate this out a little bit.
Yeah.
Is this how Adam Sandler is living, do you think? Because he really, He is, for a lot of people. They rely on him creating these movies sort of annually to keep their families fed. Boom operators, gaffers, assistant directors, you know, all these. He's got this whole infrastructure, which is like a small town that moves around with him.
Yeah.
Shooting out these location movies because he feels just, well, like a going to Hawaii.
Happy Madison on screen.
Well, wasn't there actually an issue? Well, not an... Well, I guess an issue. But wasn't there a thing behind the scenes with this? Because Rob Schneider was cut from Grown Ups 2. But wasn't there a whole thing where he was like...
There was
like,
a scheduling conflict.
Scheduling conflict. That was it. It was like, no bad blood. I was like, ah, scheduling conflict. And my wife is having a kid, so I can't be in this.
I remember... it must have been something else then. Because I remember Rob Schneider being like, I'm financially in trouble now or something like that. And I was like... Adam Sandler that's cut
a,
him out.
That's a
and
crazy,
now he's going poor.
Well, dangerous way to live.
So what I tend to do when I'm watching a movie I either really like or don't care for, I'll just go on IMDb and read the trivia.
Yeah.
And so for the first one, at the end of making Grown Ups, and I guess it made a shit ton of money because Adam Sandler then gifted all the cast members, the main cast members, Maseratis.
Yeah.
And I think it was Chris Rock was just like, I felt a little bit annoyed because I was Adam Sandler. I felt like I was Adam Sandler's bitch.
Yeah.
And so I just feel that maybe it's everyone is like, and then again, the town is a metaphor for Adam Sandler's relationship for everyone else. That everyone is just like doing what he wants.
And it's like, it's, you know, it's nice. You don't have to go to work, but occasionally you'll be rolled into Shaquille O'Neal's penis in a tire. And you've just got to figure out whether or not that's a deal you want to strike, you know?
Yeah.
It's a really interesting question about the price you put on your own dignity, isn't it? Because it's like, we're going to afford you so much freedom that, you know, 23 hours of the day are all yours to live out as you choose within this protective bubble where you don't have to worry about anything.
Yeah.
However, for 1 hour a day, we're going to need you to get to the school hall because Adam's on his fucking way and we need you filling those seats.
I can actually feel within myself like a very dark stirring about the malaise that long-term living in the situation would put you in. Just the idea of like...
Is this communism?
another, I guess, supporting argument here is the fact that... So the party at the end, the 80s party at the end. So that was on a whim.
Yeah.
It was not planned.
That's right.
There was no invitation and it was really sent.
Like everyone. It was the biggest party in the world.
Just an idea. It was
organized at the start of the day.
Yeah, I also like to think that everyone had costumes.
Yeah, I like to think this explains why there were so many people dressed as Prince. It was just like a miscommunication. There was more panic. There was meant to be one Prince. What are you doing?
Well, you're going to ruin the illusion.
What is the communication network between everyone who is an Adam Sandler and his family? Because you're right. This is spread purely through word of mouth. It's a whisper network.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, some of Lenny's old friends from the Jay Giles band are showing up.
Yeah. You
know, they've installed a stage and speakers and a light show for them to play Centerfold. It's all like... Yeah, this is
shit. Well, happens fast in this town.
Well, when Tim Meadows gets choked out, and then everyone comes out, and then there's Shaq there who's like, "Oh, you strangled my brother." How does he know so quickly?
Well, presumably the police got called.
Well, but it's a split second.
And they're not really. The trick is, and I think this is further support of the argument, they're not really police officers. There aren't actually cops in this town. There are two guys who are dressed up like police officers.
And they do point a live gun.
Adam Sandler dressed up two guys like cops and were like, yeah, do what you like.
Those guns are going off, which I assume because no one gets actually shot. They're just full of blanks.
It's blanks.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Maybe there's a secret police we don't see, but
they're dressed in
civvies.
Oh,
God. Well, now we are talking communism with secret police and tie. What I love in retrospect, I didn't figure this out at the time, is the censors deemed it appropriate to remove, like, the teacher ball kids looking at the test pupils joke. However, the bit where Peter Dante says the Peter Dante who sold your parents' snowmobile and sold it for crack cocaine is gone, they kept in.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Also, all of Nick Swardson's sort of gay, panicky sort of storyline, that's all in there. The kids need to see that.
That's important.
It's good.
Making out with a dog is good, maybe.
It's so...
Maybe it is.
The way that... So there's one thing I want to talk about the ending of the film and the messaging of the film.
Yeah.
That is very, very strange. But just going back to the gay panicky stuff real quick. This movie handles that stuff so weird, because with Nick Swardson, they're like, what a freak.
Yeah.
But then with the yoga teacher, they're like, it's very normal. This is a very normal thing.
Yep.
Who cares?
Yeah. Well, he's Truman in this movie, to be honest. Like, that was what radiated from the screen this time. I was like, the guy, the yoga instructor is the one sane man. Excuse the turn of phrase, but he's playing the whole thing straight.
He's
a straight man in this crazy world around him.
The way that yoga class or whatever it is runs is so crazy, which, like, you know, obviously there's the weird moment with the janitor before John Lovitz comes in and makes everyone
good. It's genuinely still so funny. Yeah. John Lovitz rocks.
John Lovitz is amazing. That much John Lovitz in a movie is honestly incredible.
It's delightful.
But then this, like, it's weird. All of these people have come, like, all of these women have come in for this class.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that none of them are talking about the fact it's a new class or it's a new constructor. They're all just there, like, this is something we do. Mm. And then the instructor comes in and is like, hi. And no one's met him. No one knows who this guy is. He's like, this is a new course. Yeah. I'm a new guy. Yeah.
This does go to the Adam Sandler owns the town theory, though, because it's like, now I'm imagining there's a notice board and it's like, today's activities. You could go to a yoga class or learn parasailing.
I like as well that if Adam Sandler's hired the yoga instructor, he's like, it feels like he's getting too deep. He's like, I need a guy for my wife to find very attractive.
But she gotta be gay, or else I'm too threatened.
Yeah, but also,
he better be.
There's a point in the movie where he doesn't know he's gay. So I think Adam Sandler's losing track of what's real and what isn't.
Yeah.
Again, another argument for this being basically everyone at Adam Sandler's whim is props.
Yeah.
So that little monkey that gets ripped to shreds by a deer.
Yeah.
This instructor somehow, just by sewing magic, sews it up like it's brand new. And if you look at that stuffed animal, it doesn't got like shitty...
No, it's a brand new monkey.
It's a brand new monkey that they've tracked down. Like, someone in
production...
You can
bet they've got a warehouse full of those fucking monkeys somewhere.
Yeah, someone in production should, like, track down that and be like, say you sewed this because we've got a great third act finale. We've paid an actor to lose his nuts to a deer. It's going to be great.
There's a scene I really want to see with the yoga instructor, which is when Higgins is... It's a deleted scene.
Yeah.
When Higgins is rolling through town, they roll past Selma Hayek's boutique business store, and outside of it, she's standing there with... I don't know if which kids, but I know that she's with Becky, their daughter, because the yoga instructor's standing outside in, like, a new sort of louder shirt, and Becky's on his shoulders.
Yeah.
And it's it's part of the world. Like, Becky and him know each other later on when they're at the supermarket. She calls him Stud Muffin. Like, there is a whole scene of him bonding with the family, shopping with the family, like, doing all of the stuff that they're like, we don't need it. And the idea of any scene in this movie being like, we don't need it, when you don't need any of them. Like, how do they make those decisions?
What's the distinction?
So, Adam Sandler running the town. The movie, because the messaging of this movie goes against usually what these exact type of movies are, because what happens in this film is that people that are aging, so they're all in their presumably 40s.
Yeah, early 50s maybe.
Usually what happens in movies like this, it's like, it's okay that you're losing your youth.
Yeah.
But this movie takes the opposite stance, which is nostalgia is fucking awesome. Kids are fucked. And, like, living in the 80s fucking rules, and adults will always run this fucking town. Live in the past, relive your past glories. It's still awesome. If you peaked in high school, don't worry. That's actually still cool.
That's sick.
Also, in terms of more Adam Sandler fuckery, so he tells his kid how, like, this is how you pick up, you know, the
moves. The three steps.
You got to get him smiling, say they got a sweet smile, and then you got to ask him on a date. And
before they realize you're fugly.
And then you see this with his kid doing that. But the kid is being at his 1950s ice cream shop,
parlor, yeah.
And his old, I guess, Adam Sandler's old friend is, you know, his boss, and he's
Colin
also
Quinn.
He's mentoring his kid to kind of be like the next Adam Sandler.
Oh no,
because he's saying your dad did this and it worked on your, like, you know, your mum, basically.
He's like, somebody's going to need to keep running the town,
and then maybe my wife, and then he hits another kid with something. Yeah, no, I don't know.
Then he brains a woman who works at the ice cream parlor with a scoop.
Yeah. Her name's Tanya, by the way. Like
stunt actors. Yeah.
No, she's not.
She was a yoga instructor who got roped in for a day on set. Yeah. We met her in Los Angeles.
We met her. We had a real journey trying to, like, figure out who this woman was, and eventually figured it out, met her. She's super lovely. That's like the one movie she's ever done. Which is like, and this speaks to the let's zoom out of Grown Ups too, but in real life, like Happy Madison Productions, she just... Her dad was like friends with someone and she wound up in the movie. And I think that's most Adam Sandler flicks.
We joked earlier about tricking Adam Sandler into thinking we were part of Happy Madison Productions. But I feel like if we were just, you got to get on set and then you're in the movie. I feel like that's all you need to do.
Adam Sandler, I know that Grown Ups 3 was greenlit. And I know that your production was halted and it still hasn't come out. There is still time to cast all five of us.
You know, if you want to bring your production to New Zealand and also then Melbourne, I'm sure there's some tax breaks there.
This is not the way. Ask forgiveness, not permission.
Yeah, exactly.
We find out where it is being shot. I think we just all turn up holding booms. Yep. No one will question us. And then we just drift our way into frame when they're shooting.
Mm. Wait until there's a scene with five people, five booms. Booms were in. Do you think if you lived in this town, this Adam Sandler town, you would be getting worried? Like, I feel like what we're seeing is the point where Adam Sandler's sort of losing his mind. Like, previously, we're seeing a town where Adam Sandler's trying to recapture the nostalgia of his childhood. And he's like, this is, are we going to open a 1950s ice cream shop? But now
Hold on, Jackson. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but do you think there's a good point in the town being dictated by one man?
I think there would have been a sweet spot while everyone was like, I don't have to work. Yeah. I get a basic income from Adam Sandler, but now, like, we're at a point where Adam Sandler the night before is like, let a deer into my home to piss on my son. And then he goes to sleep and everybody who works at the production is like, he's losing it. He's like, later on, we're going to fight some children. And you're like, I don't know how much longer I can sustain this in Adam Sandler's maniac town.
You got to imagine before it first all kicked off, it would have been this, like, you know, middle of America, just, you know, whole town falling apart, things, there's just no money to make it, you know, to do basic repairs or beautification. And then this guy comes in, cock of the walk, and he's like, I got this idea, I will reinvigorate this whole town, but I own you. And you're like, well, what do you mean by that? Like,
but I'm at first, maybe it's a fine deal. At first, maybe you don't mind doing it, you know, but
it's
then
kind of like a serfdom.
Exactly. You're like, Adam Sandler is my king.
And I just got to till the fields. Those fields are kind of
entertaining Adam Sandler.
It's a Jeff Bezos sort of approach to capitalism. What do you guys think was the original industry that was sort of the backbone of this town when it actually existed legitimately?
That what may have probably happened is, based on the buildings and stuff that we've seen, apart from the Kmart, everything is, and the movie sort of makes a point of it, is that the town, and I think that this is probably more heavily in the first Grown Ups, although I remember Grown Ups 1 being set in a cabin, but I could be misremembering.
They go to a lake somewhere as a holiday.
Well done.
Cancel going to Milan.
Fuck yeah.
That's legend stuff, bro.
I'm actually fucking on one right now.
Joel, I feel like you were going somewhere with that. What is the architecture telling us?
So the way that the town is like, it's very much like, since Adam Sandler left, the town kind of stayed the same and got kind of decrepit. Like, the fact the ice cream shop, it's not that it reopened, it's just the same one that he used to go to as a kid.
Yeah, sure.
You've got like a lot of things, like even just like repair shops and stuff like that, is things he remembers. Like, because, like, it's just things, how, like, everything kind of just stayed the same.
Yeah.
Except for Kmart.
That's true.
Kmart feels new.
Yeah.
So I guess the town was probably
talking, is it like an old, like, is it a mining town that the
logging
kind of all dried up? Logging, a quarry. What's in a quarry? Stone.
There's a lot of brick. I don't know what that's telling us, but there's a lot, like, the right?
Yeah.
It feels like a lot of the buildings are brick. Exteriors.
In my head, I remember a lot of weatherboard.
Interesting.
I feel like they probably there's a train station. I feel like it was maybe a gateway town. You have a lot of people through. A lot of people coming to visit. You know,
so like, maybe coals going through there.
Or maybe there's a train station and the weather seems nice. Maybe it was kind of like a tourist destination.
Yeah. Oh, it could be like an old, like, sort of in you know, Australia where we have like those old gold rush towns.
Oh, yeah, true.
It's kind of built up there and then, like, you know, over time, no one really gives a shit.
It seems like you really want it to be a mining town, but I think, unfortunately, based on the amount of greenery and stuff we see, it's probably
not. Where they jump? Is that a quarry? Is that a flooded quarry?
That was a quarry.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I don't understand quarries. What's a quarry?
A quarry is like a mine.
Okay.
It's like a mine you don't go in. You just go on. That's a quarry.
Joel and I got the big brain on Jackson.
Joel and I doing faces at each other now, which is not going to get picked up on a podcast, but we're having fun.
Well, yeah, I mean, okay, so there's a quarry.
Yeah. Quarries are mines.
It seems like it could probably be a college town too, which I know you said towards the start of the episode.
Well, I think that depends, and I was going to ask this question. Are the college kids in on it? Or is the college separate and they found this horrible
the
little...
The college, it is suggested, is sort of within the greater vicinity of the sort of catchment of the town, but they had to travel in
to
sort of get to where the grown-ups hang out. I am on board for the mining thing.
Yeah.
Because I think the quarry is like our one great clue here.
It's the one thing we can
that combined
grasp
with
on.
The rail infrastructure. This makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah.
So we had mineral resources, maybe gold.
Yeah.
It went to shit, which has happened. We've spent a little bit of time in Kentucky and West Virginia in the States, and I. We've seen firsthand the devastating effects.
What it happens all the time.
Yeah, I mean, when the
ass falls out of these places, it's terrible. Drugs come in and ruin society. Yeah. Thank God for Adam Sandler at Kmart.
He would have seemed like a godsend when he first arrived. Here's a guy who left the town, there's bitterness that he's gone, but he comes back, and he comes back pockets deep. He says, hey, let me buy your town.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, what? Well,
what does that mean? But okay.
All right.
Okay. And he's like, now entertain me as kind of like a gesture. I think, this is my court.
See, I think that starts slowly.
Yeah.
Adam Sandler, here's what I imagine. Say I work at, I don't know, the service station. I'm at the 7-Eleven. But Adam Sandler likes hanging out with me. At first, I'm just working at the service station. Yeah. But then one day he arrives and he's like, hey, let's go ride go-karts or whatever. And I'm like, well, I got a job. And he's like, that's fine. You can just leave it. Then slowly I leave it more and more, and then I have to only go there 5 minutes a day, and then not at all. But it doesn't matter because everybody's getting paid by Adam Sandler.
You know what? I feel like Adam Sandler would not like, you know, and this holds true in the movie, is it's like your boss at the service station would be like, hey, if you're not going to show up, that's fine, but you don't work here anymore.
Mm. Yeah.
He'd be like, no, you don't understand. Like, a big part of the appeal for Adam is that I still work here. I'm going to come in uniform and do like 5 minutes. And you don't have to pay me. I'm not on the payroll, but it's just so important we keep this going.
What about this though? It's like your options are you go and do your job. I'm doing air quotes. You can't catch it then in audio. You could have said it like this. Your job.
That's true. Nailed it.
Or you're hanging out with Adam Sandler, like that's your life in the town. So you're sort of the elasticity of the hours that you work are inversely proportionate to your proximity to Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
If you are close to Adam Sandler, you do not have to spend really any time at all at your job. Mm. But if you are far away from Adam Sandler's social circle, you must be at your place of work.
It sounds so scary to be in as in a circle and just be like on call for whatever he's doing.
Oh, yeah.
I'd rather do the job.
I'd
rather work at Kmart.
Me too. I would pick Kmart as well. This is scary.
Well, you mentioned that, all these towns, the bottom falls out and a lot of people go to drugs and that kind of stuff. But if you look at some of the adults who do have like the jobs in this town, a lot of them seem that they were maybe drug fucked. So I'm thinking of maybe you've got like three examples here. You've got the bus driver who's clearly like...
Adam Sandler was so entertained by how he was pre-Adam Sandler coming in. He's like, you can stay on drugs.
You can stay on drugs. But he seems like the kind of guy who's like just like addled because he's had years of abuse.
Yeah.
And this is maybe his recovering, but the damage has been done. You then have perhaps John Lovitz.
Yeah.
Who I think is definitely a reformed criminal of some kind. And then also the principal.
Of some kind. Yeah. The guy is clearly a pervert. Yeah. He has been arrested for sexual crimes.
And the word reformed is also pretty generous.
The drugs he was addicted to? Yeah, pervert pills.
Yeah, Herbert Bills. And then, yes, the principal
yeah.
Clearly is seemed like maybe had connections to the mob at one point.
Well, and it also beautifully explains the incompetence of the people who aren't within Adam Sandler's inner circle. If Adam Sandler just lined up everyone in town and was like, janitor, principal, yoga instructor, cops, bus driver, cop.
Anyone who has a job doing the job well?
No.
The ice cream store guy makes... because ice cream store guy also gets tricked into making it look like he's taking a big
shit. I cannot get past the Adam Sandler job lottery. At the start of some, you all just line up and he just walks along and he points at different people and tells them what they're going to be his version of for the fucking next 3 months.
I would say that Peter Dante does he takes his job as a cop really seriously, but then I did have a flash of that genuinely comedic moment in the movie where the fight has started to break out at the party and Adam Sandler's wife says, somebody call the police, out of the crowd. Peter Dante is wearing nothing but skis, a Speedo, and a foam dome that's got like 8 cans of beer around his head and says, we're already here.
He knows how ridiculous it is to imagine him as a real police officer.
A lot of them understand what this town is.
Yeah, when he says we're already here, it's sarcastic.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we're already here.
In the college students, the beautiful Lonely Island who are just kind of like gyrating on a car. Yeah. Clearly that feels also like maybe that's a great gag that Adam Sandler wanted to play on one of his good friends.
Yeah.
So I feel even
when
that
Kevin James's wife is like, I didn't expect this. She means knew. Like it wasn't she on the knew. Itinerary. Yeah. Like,
no, I think it was on the itinerary because she's like, I didn't expect this. Big smile and a wink. But Adam called up or Larry, whatever his name was, called up and was like, I got a great joke.
As Kevin James watches balls squish against his window, he's like, this is what I'm paid for. So.
That was the best acting Kevin James did in the whole movie was when he got to pretend to be actually homophobic.
Did that scene make it into the Netflix cut?
Yeah, great question.
Yeah. Yes, although I've got a weird feeling it was shorter.
Yeah, it felt like it really blew by. Like it went, you know... When it was brought up just then, I was like, was that in there?
It was in there. There's definitely, yes, the joke and stuff is in there. You get that shot of them walking towards the car. But in the cut that Guy and I are used to, it's an
which probably you saw.
There's a lot of like body parts being squished against windows and stuff.
And another funny reveal with that scene, which it is worth probably noting the jokes that do land in this movie because you can cover them in one podcast. Cutting to the fact that the driving instructor and the kid are the other car. That's funny.
That's good.
That's a good time. I'm also thinking, if you look at this where some people may have lost themselves in the role a little bit too much. There's the scene where they go in the supermarket, and this is, I think, where Adam Sandler is like, I'm going to have this great confrontation with who I think my wife is like crushing on, the yoga instructor. And so he wants to have this conversation, this scripted conversation that he wants to have there.
Yeah.
But then the woman who is just obsessed with him comes in, and I feel that bit, she's lost herself in the role.
Yeah,
well, and Adam Sandler doesn't like.
See,
this.
I don't know. I'm still firmly of the belief that Adam Sandler has lost himself in the role.
No,
Sandler's really struggling in this movie to tell the difference between reality and his own created fiction.
I have a theory that this scene, I think, very heavily implies, which is that Adam Sandler bought the town, but it was never his intention for it to become Adam Sandlerville. But the town, as time goes by, is so scared he's going to leave. So they are like secretly coming together to make sure that everything, we can't have him leave. He needs to have
the secret police.
the whole
and
town.
And this is why there can be no such thing as a benevolent dictator. Because even when the dictator has the best of intentions and doesn't want to mess with anything, the mere fact that that much power is centralized to a focal point changes the behavior of everyone in it.
Scene in the supermarket where that's also a pretty good scene where he's trying to have the confrontation with the yoga instructor, but then you've also got girlfriend from sixth grade coming in and like there's so much conflict and Adam Sandler's like, I have no idea what's happening, but none of this seems good for me, so let's go.
Yeah.
He checks out of that.
Also, something that has no payoff because it seems like the Selma Hayek, with the person that dated Adam Sandler in sixth grade, is like, you're delusional.
Yeah.
But then she eats the note as if to be like, don't even think about it. Mm. But Adam Sandler's like, I don't know what's going on. What does this note mean?
Right.
Yeah, and then there's no payoff for that because it's like
well, she kicks her in the head.
Yeah, she kicks her in the head.
Yeah, that's true.
She does kick her in the head.
It's also very telling that his child's driving instructor and his wife's assistant are married.
Yeah.
That's just very like, I don't know, two people close to my family, connect them up. Yeah. I can't stop thinking, and forgive me for not remembering their names,
yeah,
the bald family that keep going,
what?
Imagine that
Bump D.
If that's Adam Sandler's choice. I want this family to behave like this. You as the dad have to be like, I'm sorry, son. You're going to have to say this horrible catchphrase. Yeah. There's nothing we can do about it.
I want to make it really clear for the people listening that literally, in the movie Grown Ups 2, there are three characters who are in one family and they try to get the word what across the line as a catchphrase.
Yeah.
They're trying to float that as like a let's get it on merch catchphrase in the film. It is fucking insane.
I feel like they're really close to Adam Sandler and they've started phoning it in. Mm. They're like, I'm actually running out of ways to engage with him when he comes along.
What?
So how small can I make it? Yeah. Like, what can I reduce it to that is still serviceable?
Yeah.
And Adam Sandler's so discombobulated by what's happening that every time they're like, what? He's like, well, that is what they say.
Yeah. That's what I pay him for. I pay him for that part.
That does like, you know, call back to that like nostalgic era where like catchphrases were just a huge
part
of media. And so that could just be things of being like, that's what I want. I miss this. I miss when this happened. Do this what? Do the what? Do the what? Make your wife do the what?
I am totally blown away by where we got to.
Yeah. It's unexpected.
I really, I honestly feel like we stumbled into a theory that holds water, that actually stands up to scrutiny.
Yeah.
Like there's a real sense of pride I'm feeling.
I'm feeling very proud of Guy.
We don't often feel that after
an episode.
Yeah, it's rare for us to come to what you might call what the layman would call a conclusion.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think we should be proud of ourselves today for what we achieved.
Yeah, well, I think, like Adam Sandler might be in charge. I think I'm going around to more the JD theory, which is like Adam Sandler injected this town with a lot of money. And the town are being like, I guess he is our king and we need to service him unbeknownst to him.
And I think in many ways that still remains a consummate metaphor for what's happening in Happy Madison Productions, where Adam Sandler, despite, you know, he is responsible for all these people, but also these people are sort of responsible for it. I think it still works. I think it's still an effective metaphor.
Yeah. No one's going to tell Adam Sandler in the town, no, I don't want to do that because they fear the implications.
Yeah, and Adam Sandler could never stop because all of these people rely on him so heavily. You know, it's a kind of horrible catch-22. Yeah.
It really is.
And sometimes in the same way that Happy Madison and in the town, sometimes he goes on holiday, like he gets shoulder-tapped to go and do something of interest, which is like he leaves the town to go on a holiday and experience what life's like as an actual person.
Goes to Hawaii, meets a girl who's got amnesia, dates her, marries her.
Go and work with the Safdie brothers in New York on a diamond movie.
Get involved in the diamond trade.
Yeah.
Get addicted to gambling, run up some debts.
Yeah, shot in the head, dies, fine again.
Well, it must be nice living in the town when this Adam Sandler does go on an actual holiday, because I feel like it might be a nice break.
Yeah. Mm.
Quick question round the horn, if I may.
Please.
I feel like we're closing things up.
Yeah.
Who would rather work in the construct of Grown Ups 2 for Kmart and who for Adam Sandler, or with all we know?
I am very much team Adam Sandler.
Yep.
It means that not only is my life chaos all the time, I'm sort of also getting to live a second teenage dream of mine, which is to be a member of the Jackass crew.
Yeah, sure.
So I feel like that's two birds, one stone for me. As close to Adam Sandler as possible, make me
part of that crew.
I'm definitely
Team Sandman. Sometimes I don't like decisions,
so
I feel this would smooth out my brain somewhat, and I'm kind of at their whimsy.
I think I would pick living close to Adam Sandler because I think the most appropriate place for me at any point in history would have been a medieval jester being like, spit in me eye, my lord. I think that's basically, I would slot right in.
Jackson, truly a cuck for the ages.
Oh, yeah, we have no dignity.
Yeah.
There's so many things we would do for cash.
Yeah.
Yourself?
I'm blown away by that. I think I'd have to work at Kmart, and I know that the hours are harder, and I know it's a more challenging graft. But to me, the freedom of power, of movement, knowing where my daytime and nighttime hours are, and like just being in proximity to the Sandler Circus, and being like, I don't think it would be difficult to to, I think it wouldn't be difficult to get in. I think it looks pretty fucking tough to get out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think, you know, you've made your Sandler beds there, boys. Yeah. And I'm just going to look at you from behind the gun shelf at Kmart and say, Godspeed.
Better you than me. Yeah. I'm 100% with Guy as well. I'm team Kmart all the way. And it's like, it's an interesting thing because it's, autonomy is so important to me. And literally, I think I would be working way more hours at the Kmart. But it's just that sense of, like, I feel like I am in control of my own destiny.
Yeah.
Okay. Am I earning minimum wage? Yes. But no one can yank me out to go to a recital on the turn of a dime.
Yeah, I think if Adam Sandler woke me up at 2 a.m. and was like, you got to put lobsters down your pants, have them bite your balls. Yeah. I'd be like, this is where I'm meant to be.
Yeah. I'd be like, yes, thank you for making this decision for me, Adam. I don't need to make these decisions.
I will.
Yeah. A dream of, I think, both myself and Jack is to one day be controlled by, like, Remy the Rat situation.
Yeah, a Ratatouille situation is basically... Sweet paradise for the both of us. So,
like, just to be a big fleshy mech for Adam Sandler would kind of be a dream come true.
Yeah.
I'll do what you want, Adam. Let me be your meat jester.
I just think that subservience is really where I need to be in life.
I would just like to say
the podcast is going somewhere else right now. Do you guys do merch? Because put that on a t-shirt. Like, maybe you're a fleshy mech for Adam Sandler.
I'd just like to say that whilst I am team working for Adam, I'm there for the chaos of it. I do enjoy making choices, and the idea of being so subservient, that isn't me.
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
But I do, I am leaning also, like, because Kmart also seems chaotic, because, like, I guess most of your job is just cleaning up rafts that have been activated.
Most of your job
in
is dealing with Adam Sandler.
You lose a lot of agency, because basically the main people are coming at Adam and his cronies, and you are powerless to stop them from doing anything.
And all of you have forgotten that Nick Swardson puts a real human turd into the display toilet when they're in there.
Yeah, he does that. You think you're out, you're not out. Yeah. You can work at Kmart all you like.
That's the trick. Even if you work for Kmart, you're working for Adam Sandler.
You'll have lobsters on your balls and you won't even be getting paid for it.
You're at the party. You're in the fight. You're also at the recital if you're Tim Meadows, who is the only person we see working at Kmart.
At least... we understand the value of money. You don't get paid in dollars. Everything is free. You have no idea what a life actually is like.
You don't know what a life is actually like because you haven't been inside a tire rolling down a hill. You don't know.
You've never lived.
Even in this thought exercise, there is a separation between those of us who work at Kmart and those of us who are under the Sandler umbrella. And this is what they want.
You don't know what it feels like with a tire just slamming into your nuts at 200 miles an hour. You don't know that beautiful pain?
You haven't lived until you've potentially experienced what your last moments of life of Earth could be.
Yeah, exactly.
We could die at any moment. Life is valuable.
We're living
to
on the
Adam
edge.
Said.
You've never been strung up by your feet on a bus for 3 hours. You don't know what that's like. Exhilarating.
Yes, I will join Guy in that. I think that all of this can be summed up by the beautiful lyrics of REO Speedwagon, which are the first words we hear as the credits roll. Live every moment, love every day, because before you know it, your precious time slips away.
Yeah, wow.
It's a message for all of us.
That's something
I think, no matter if you're Team Kmart or Team Sandman, that is something that you should absolutely, you know, take away from
it's
this
something
episode.
Something we can all get behind. Yeah.
Have that tattooed across your chest.
Yeah.
And on that note, I've been Joel.
I've also been Joel.
I've been Jackson.
And I've been Guy.
I've been Tim Kmart Band.
We have been Plumbing the Death Star, and
we have been the worst idea of all time. Anyone want to? Should we plug any
pluggables?
Oh yeah, because this is coming out during the Melbourne Comedy Festival.
If that's true, buy a ticket, come watch Guy Montgomery do stand-up comedy. I do not mention Grown Ups 2 once.
Okay, cool. And if you're coming for us, go see Guy Montgomery.
Go see Guy Montgomery.
Show. Tickets will be available now. Links in the show notes, I believe.
I also believe that we're plugging the entire festival. So if you're in Melbourne or you can get to Melbourne, go to the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. Buy tickets. Buy every ticket imaginable.
Yep.
Anytime there's a deal, snap those tickets up.
Oh, yeah. Tight ass Tuesdays. Deals. Oh, you better believe we're going on a Tuesday.
These guys know what they're talking about.
Important that you do buy tickets to Guy's show first.
Yeah.
But then with all that extra money.
Yeah.
which we know you've all got, listeners.
Yeah, yeah. Stimulate Melbourne's economy and the comedy scene by going to buy Guy Montgomery's comedy show. What was the title of that show once again?
Guy Montgomery by name, Guy Montgomery by nature.
Yes. That's Guy Montgomery by name, Guy Montgomery by nature.
Go
buy tickets now.
Do it
if you can't
now.
Make it, it's fine. Mm. Buy tickets.
Yeah.
Guy loves performing to a half-empty room, provided that he knows it's in theory sold out.
Not from Australia? Can you not get to Melbourne?
If you're
still
right
do
now
it.
Living in the US or the UK or somewhere where you can't quite travel, if you don't even have a passport, it's fine. Go on to the MICF website and just search for Guy Montgomery and buy those tickets.
I've changed my mind. The show's off. Don't come.
This has been Plumbing the Death Star, worst idea of all time. Thank you so much for listening. Yeah. And subscribe to both of our podcasts.
I'm hitting stop right there. There's such a strangely menacing tone for that.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.